This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 31st of May 2024. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District's Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Purpart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And standing in for Paul this month, we are delighted to welcome Chris Atkinson from the Hampshire Chronicle.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all one word. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Junction upgrade left out of M3 plan. Major milestone for new treatment centre, and cocktail festival returns to the city. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
And it's junction upgrade left out of M3 plan. Anger as hopes dashed that danger spot would be improved. There is disappointment as it has been revealed that the government's M3 Junction 9 rebuild will not include the work civic chiefs wanted to see at the dangerous cart and horses junction. The Transport Secretary has approved National Highways multi-million pound plans to transform journeys around Junction 9 of the M3. The £2 million project will create free-flowing links between the M3 and the A34 in both directions to improve connections between the South Coast, the Midlands and London, National Highways said. But the County Council and many local people hope there would be investment in improving the junction at the Cart and Horses at Kingsworthy, which has a chronic poor safety record. Leader of the County Council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said they were disappointed, as the Secretary of State did not consider mitigation made by the Council. It will also include 2.8 kilometres of new cycling and walking facilities, including four subways, a toucan crossing, and a 1.7 kilometre new bridleway. However, the improvements will change the local highway network around the Cart and Horses Junction, introducing a new slip road onto the northbound M3 created from the A33. There will also be a new shared path for people walking and cycling between the Cart and Horses Junction and Winnall. The junction is staggered between the B3047 and the A33 at Kingsworthy. The B3047 connects the villages of Abbotsworthy and Martyrworthy to the east and Abbots Barton and onto Winchester city centre to the south. The A33 links to the A34 and the M3 to the south and onto Basingstoke to the north. When the application was submitted in 2022, no indications referred to improvements to the Cart and Horses Junction, which made Hampshire County Council develop proposals for the junction and a public consultation that will be sent to National Highways. Options were for either a signalised junction or two compact roundabouts. The County Council did not find funding to deliver the scheme and was willing to work with National Highways to develop a delivery and funding plan. However, after the latest news of the National Highways plan, which does not include the County Council recommendation, Councillor Jackie Porter asked at the authority's annual general meeting what actions the council will take as a result of the decision. The new leader of the council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said there was disappointment at the decision, since the Secretary of State did not consider the mitigation made by the council. Councillor Adams-King said, "So, as you know, the M3 Junction 9 improved application was granted development consent by the Secretary of State on May 16. Despite the evidence submitted by the County Council, which is a matter of public record, unfortunately and disappointingly, the examining authority did not consider the mitigation was required for the Cart and Horses Junction. So the scheme remains unfunded until such time as another funding opportunity arises. Councillor Porter and I have met and we have talked previously about what funding opportunities there might be. I'm very happy that we are taking that conversation forward now that we have some clarity about this. Thus, we know where we are, I guess. We can begin to talk then about how to bring forward the plan." Despite the plans not included in this National Highways scheme, the Council confirmed that it will study new alternatives to deliver the changes that the public is so desperately seeking, said Councillor Porter. Councillor Adams-King said, "The fact that Junction 9 scheme is not extended to include the cart and horses doesn't mean that we can't cooperate with National Highways over the construction of what we would like to construct there to improve the junction. The main work at Junction 9 is set to begin next year, with National Highways aiming to have it finished within 3 years.
Major milestone for new treatment centre. A major milestone has been reached following the cutting of the first sod at the site of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust's new elective hub an orthopaedic outpatients department in Winchester. A ceremony at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital was attended by colleagues and supporters of Hampshire Hospitals, with the Trust's Chief Executive, Alex Whitfield, joining MP Steve Bryan, City Council Leader Martin Todd, and Jason Griffiths, Regional Director for Integrated Health Projects, IHP. The elective hub and orthopaedic outpatients department, which are due to open in 2025, will help to provide more capacity for patients requiring orthopaedic operations, such as hip and knee replacements. The elective hub will deliver an additional 2,400 procedures each year, improving access to elective surgery and reducing the backlog. The facility will operate 6 days a week, with consultants from Hampshire Hospitals and University Hospital Southampton coming together to deliver this work for patients from both trusts. The new orthopaedic outpatients department will then provide further elective capacity, significantly reducing how long patients will wait for an elective outpatient appointment. A one-stop model will also reduce the number of follow-up appointments by delivering the care patients need in just one appointment, with teams working side by side. Ms. Whitfield said, "These projects are incredibly important for our patients in Winchester and beyond, allowing us to deliver more timely care for those waiting for non-urgent but really important orthopaedic procedures. We work very closely with our system partners, and this is a clear example of effective system working, with colleagues and partners working collaboratively to bring our plans for these new purpose-built facilities to life. A huge thank you to all who have enabled us to reach this major milestone, and With building work now underway, it is really exciting to think of all the patients, colleagues and others in our communities who will benefit from these fantastic facilities in the years to come. Mr. Griffiths said, IHP, under the P22 framework, are delighted to be the construction partner to the NHS on this prestigious project. We look forward to delivering excellent elective and outpatient facilities in Winchester in 2025.
Cocktail Festival returns to the city. Winchester's annual Cocktail Festival returns this weekend after a five-year break. Originally started in 2016 by the team behind Cabinet Rooms, working with Winchester BID, the aim of Winchester Cocktail Week is to encourage cocktail lovers to explore the city. Having grown in popularity, the festival was put on hold in 2020 while local hospitality businesses worked hard to keep afloat during the pandemic. This comeback festival is a little smaller than previous years, but is set to be a good opportunity for people to have some fun and support local businesses. Festival coordinator Gary Whiter from Cabinet Rooms said, "We are really excited to bring Winchester's Cocktail Festival back to the city this year. I was a bit nervous about starting up the event again, but with the help of our sponsors at Brown Foreman and the Typeface Group, as well as the enthusiasm of the businesses taking part, we're all set and ready to go. It feels like the time is right to enjoy a week-long celebration of spirit and mixed drinks." Wristbands cost £12 and can be brought at the Cabinet Rooms on Jury Street and are valid from June 1st until June 9th. Wristband holders can buy signature festival cocktails for £6 at Cabinet Rooms, Lucky Lychee at the Green Man, St James Tavern, the King Alfred, the Mucky Duck, the Old Vine, the Roebuck, the Winchester Orangery and the William Walker. Go to winchestercocktailweek.co.uk for more.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Bannister, Linda Margaret, née McEwen, died on the 8th of May 2024, aged 71 years. Barry, Gillian, passed away in Winchester on the 7th of May 2024, aged 81 years. Bryant, Verna Agnes, passed away peacefully at home on the 9th of May 2024, aged 86, following a short illness. Butler, Sir Percy James, known as Jim, CBEDL, died peacefully at home on the 14th of May 2024, aged 95. Caldwell, Eric Victor, passed away at home on the 11th of May 2024, aged 94. Cooper, Rita, formerly Ship, passed peacefully Sunday the 28th of April 2024 at St Catherine's View, aged 95. Dally, Anne Teresa. We are sad to announce the passing of Anne on the 8th of May 2024. Ferrer, John Christopher, known as Sam, of Ashton, Bishop's Waltham, passed away peacefully in Winchester Hospital, Hampshire, on the 19th of May 2024, aged 87. Fogarty, Mervyn, sadly passed away peacefully at home in his sleep on the 13th of May 2024, aged 63 years. Green, Rosemary Phyllis, late of Tegdown Meads, Winchester, passed away peacefully at West Holm Care Home on 8th of May 2024. Hamlin, Joan, née Tuppenny, passed away peacefully on the 5th of May 2024, aged 92, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Loudon, Desmond Scott, passed away peacefully on Sunday the 19th of May in West Sussex, aged 86. McKnight, Elizabeth Christina, passed away peacefully on the 17th of May 2024 at St Catherine's View Care Home. Parker, John Henry, passed away peacefully in Winchester on the 5th of May 2024, aged 86. Routley, Sylvia, known as Sylvie, passed away peacefully at Brendon Care Alton on the 2nd of May 2024, aged 82. Shepherd, Barry, passed away peacefully on the 5th of May 2024, aged 76 years. Christian comment has been written by Reverend Sue Pitkin this week. The title is If Faith and Hope Fail, Love Remains. Thank you, Daphne.
I wonder if you have a favourite Bible passage. Many of you will be familiar with one of my favourites, the first letter of Paul to the church in Corinth, which contains a beautiful chapter on love in 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist in its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. This is such a beautiful reading and so appropriate in the world today when we see war and disagreement, arguments and fighting, and we long to see love triumph. And what a challenge for all of us who seek to follow Jesus' way of love, to live up to this high ideal in our own lives. I wonder if you've ever tried substituting the word I for love. I am patient, I am kind, I am not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. I do not insist on my own way. I am not irritable or resentful. I know I can't live up to this, and I don't think any of us can. Part of loving is knowing that we are not perfect. We are not able to be patient and kind all the time. Sometimes we will be irritable and want our own way. And despite all this, we love each other and want to be together, whether in a friendship, a family, a team, a community. When even faith and hope fail, love remains. The greatest of these is love. And that came from the Reverend Sue Pitkin, Hospital Chaplain.
And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with electoral flaws, please?
Yes, this one comes from Graham Tillotson. I share Sally Yildon's frustration, Chronicle Letters, May the 23rd, at the flaws of our first-past-the-post, FPTP, electoral system. Before moving to Winchester 3 years ago, I spent my previous life living in Tory strongholds, where majorities of over 20,000 were the norm. Although I always voted for candidates of another party, I felt it a waste of time. In effect, I was disenfranchised. Unfortunately, her clamour for our country to adopt a proportional representation method, PR, will fall on deaf ears. I'm sure she must remember that in a referendum held on May the 5th, 2011, the electorate was given just such a chance to replace our FPTP method with a form of PR called the alternative vote. Turnout was a poor 42%, but the result decisive. 68% voted to keep FPTP, just 32% in favour of change. As it's never been in the interest to switch to PR, and as a referendum on the matter was held only 13 years ago, I doubt the UK electorate will get another chance to change our system for at least a quarter of a century. Besides, PR is not a perfect, flawless, more democratic system that at first it seems. Whilst it's true that it's been adopted in many other countries, it's also created its own problems. It usually results in coalitions, often leading to vociferous internal feuding and ultimately short-lived governments and another election close on the heels of the previous one. At least FPTP normally yields a government with a working majority. Despite these imperfections, I would still prefer a shift to PR in this country. But to entertain any hope of this happening any time soon would be to live in cloud cuckoo land. And that comes from Graham Tillotson, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
And this is Wrong Track from Rod Youngman. The new cross-country railway timetable from June will omit stops at Winchester on Saturdays in order to stop passengers using their trains the short distant local journeys, saying that their trains are meant for long-distant travellers to the Midlands and the North. The last time they missed out stops at Winchester, intending passengers needed to change at Basingstoke. Trains from Winchester to Basingstoke usually arrive at Platform 3. The cross-country trains depart from Platform 4, which means that passengers need to descend a flight of steps, walk through the subway, and ascend more steps. I witnessed on one occasion numbers of elderly persons dragging their luggage down and up the stairs. There was a queue to use the lifts. Meanwhile, an announcement urged passengers to hurry as the cross-country train was about to leave. When will cross-country trains realise that Winchester is an important railhead, with passengers from Portsmouth travelling to the north used to changing at Winchester and leaving from the same platform? The answer is for cross-country trains to put their hands in their pockets and buy more carriages. On another subject, when one travels by train, the usual announcements are followed by a list of stations where the lifts are out of action. And that was from Rod Youngman of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Rupert Pitt. It's got a lot of figures, money in it, so please bear with me. I'll do my best. On May the 9th, the Hampshire Chronicle editorial was concerned about the Liberal Democrat majority of 33 out of 45 seats on Eastleigh Council and the lack of open discussion about finances and services as a result of this majority. I am also concerned, having read Tim Edgeley's report in the Daily Echo, January 16, about Eastleigh. The Department for Levelling Up figures shows that Eastleigh Borough Council currently has a debt of £350,487,000. That is £350 million. Thus, Eastleigh Borough Council has more than £2,500 worth of debt per resident. Of this debt, £487,000 is tied up in short-term loans in the household sector, whilst a whopping £350 million is in long-term PWLB, that's Public Works Loan Board, loans. These are given to local authorities on behalf of the Treasury to fund capital projects. Taking into account its population of 136,974 people, the research shows that Eastleigh has a debt of £2,559 per resident, twice that of Southampton. Southampton has a total debt of £287,897,000, making the total debt per person £1,164. New Forest District Council has a debt per person of £671. Gosport's Council has a current debt of £604 per person. Fareham has a current debt of £417 per person. Hampshire County residents for all City Council districts have a current debt of £140 for each resident. Test Valley's is only £49 for each resident. Research shows UK councils currently owe a combined £97.8 billion to lenders, equivalent to £1,141 per resident as of September 2023, which is half that of Eastleigh. There is no reason why Eastleigh is in so much debt. It does not have any poor or deprived areas, as Southampton does in Totten, Calmore and parts of Bitton, whom it must borrow for to pay lenders to invest in services in these areas. Eastleigh's residents are in a higher income bracket than Southampton's. I believe that it has arisen as a result of an absence of robust discussion of what debts are being incurred and how money is being spent. Phew, and that comes from Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Well done, Daphne. Oh. Nick.
Chris Gillam writes about road revelation. The M3 A34 capacity increase has been approved despite its very poor economic performance. Anyone aware of fast-track infrastructure inquiries will not be surprised. No deep investigation of a project is allowed. No objector can cross-examine evidence, and access to the most important data is withheld. Even so, the inspector's report, while scrupulously recording objectors' views, was especially shallow and unfair, addressing none of the arguments or evidence with any counter-arguments or counter-evidence. The inspectors seem merely concerned that the procedures, defined by National Highways, had been followed, rather than examining the merits of the scheme. The most startling revelation of the inquiry was that National Highways were unable to find any documentary evidence to back their assertion that non-road alternatives to meeting the scheme objectives would have been considered. Nobody at any level of government does planning across transport modes. More shocking was that the minister, knowing that the High Court had recently judged that the government's reliance on its carbon budget delivery plan was irrational, simply stated he stood by it, and its absurd claim that the massive carbon emissions of the road programme remain consistent with the net zero imperative. Steve Brine, who never attended the inquiry and knows nothing of the evidence, of course, welcomed the decision. The same man who brought his friend Alex Sharma to Winchester and lectured us on the importance of net zero. Brian is leaving the sinking ship soon. We have yet to see if his preferred successor, Flick Drummond, has the same capacity for equivocation. Her environmental voting record suggests that she does. And that's from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Now, Charles Jennings writes on a similar topic with climate votes. It is disappointing to see the voting records of our representatives in Westminster on their opportunity to influence climate change. The recently released Vote Climate report contains a survey of MPs' voting patterns on climate issues since 2010. Vote Climate is an independent group supported by academics and people involved in particular aspects of environmental protection, such as Fergal Sharkey and Chris Packham. The report summarises the voting record of parliamentarians on 30 parliamentary votes which would have helped action on climate. It contains data on bills in Parliament on domestic energy efficiency, VAT on installation of energy-saving materials, decarbonisation and carbon capture, emission limits, burning peat, and several financial bills relating to limiting environment-damaging investments. RMPs are near the bottom of the list. Steve Brine has voted twice in favour of action on climate and 28 times against. Flick Drummond has voted 18 times against climate action and no times in favour. If our representatives aren't stepping up to the challenge of climate change, all our efforts will be diminished. And that is from Charles Jennings, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
And now, a very short letter from Stephen Percy. And it's headed, Tides Turned. Has there ever been a governing party whose time is so clearly up? The Conservative government needs to be put out of its misery. Their despondent MPs are standing down in droves, the saner ones having been expelled by Johnson, with some defecting or losing by-elections, and others having had to resign in disgrace. There is a tide in the affairs of men, and for the Tories, that tide surely turned some time ago. That comes from Stephen Percy, Easton.
Job opportunity. Thank you to Winchester City Council for allowing me, at the age of 83, to pro bono cut the brambles, nettles and other foliage covering the steps leading from Wavell Way to Badger Farm. Thank you to the political parties who ignored my letters last year. Thank you to those organisations who represent the aged and disabled, including the sight impaired. A special thank you to Simon from Badger Farm, whose local knowledge is inspiring to a true Wintonian. Could he please now tell us who overnight almost finished cutting a hammer and sickle into the side of St. Catherine's Hill? And that letter comes from J.A. Maguire, Wavell Way, Stanmore, Winchester.
And this letter comes from Gillian Russell, Traveller's Tales. Readers of the article on page 51 of last week's issue, May 23rd, about adventurer Jordan Wild's completion of his eco-triathlon across Europe, may be interested to know that next month there is an opportunity to hear from Jordan firsthand. Winchester Rotary is hosting an evening of adventure with Jordan Wiley, MBE, on Thursday, July 16th in the Theatre Royal. He will be sharing the highs and lows of a life in some of the most remote, complex, and hostile environments on the planet. Proceeds from the event will go to support Winchester Hospice and the Army Cadet Charitable Trust, UK. Tickets can be obtained via the Theatre Royal website, www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. And that is from Julian Russell, Oliver's Battery Road South, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes, the computer-generated image shows how part of the Bushfield camp could look, Chronicle, May 23rd. In my opinion, this image shows a devastated, totally levelled landscape. Far from being a green space, where currently it provides a truly beautiful natural landscape, it looks more like a desert, and walkways more like roads. Excuse me. Being present at previous public consultation meetings, the plans changed, imposing even more upon this natural land, home to myriad wild species. Currently, I have serious concerns regarding anything the planners present. Green spaces can never be replaced. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Now we have Peter Lydiard following up on another Simon Lever letter. Joined up? Simon Lever's letter, Chronicle May the 23rd, celebrates the return to farmland of the M3 construction site at Badger Farm Road. In the same issue, there is a report that National Highways will shortly commence construction of a major revamp of the M3 A34 junction. This, of course, will require a construction site nearby. Joined up thinking? Not. And that's from Peter Lydiard, Parchment Street, Winchester. And there's an editor's note to follow it. National Highways says the Badger Farm road site is too far from Junction 9.
And finishing off our letters today, we have a short one from Tony Gaster regarding the price of paint. I wonder if we should have a whip round to buy some paint for the county council. On a recent trip to the city, nearly all the road markings had faded and some are seriously needed. I suppose the plus side is, we can say we can't see the yellow line where we parked. And that is from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And there is one more letter, and that comes from Chris Higgins, headed A Contribution Not to be Forgotten. Councillor Sue Bartlett was the leader of Hampshire County Council Labour Party during the 1980s and chair of the County Council in its centenary year, 1988-89. So your article on page 31 of last week's Chronicle, describing Councillor Taylor as the first female leader of any political group at HCC, is unfortunately incorrect. Sue Bartlett has left two lasting legacies in Winchester. She was responsible for the bronze statue of the Hampshire Hog at the main entrance of the county offices, and, judging by the well-polished snout, much loved by passing children. She was a constructive local politician who collaborated with those in the opposite party, a philosophy that is sadly lacking in these divisive times. But perhaps Sue's greatest achievement was her academic research at Southampton University, where she discovered the remarkable story of a prominent but long-forgotten 13th-century businesswoman, leading to the publication of her book in 2009, Licoricia of Winchester, Marriage, Motherhood and Murder in Medieval Anglo-Jewish Community. Without this, we would never have known about Licoricia, or have her charming statue in Jury Street. Sue's was a life well lived and a contribution to our society not to be forgotten. And that comes from Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester, and it's illustrated by a photograph of the unveiling of the statue of Licoricia in Jury Street in February 2022. And they are just pulling down the blue cloth that was covering this really striking statue.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or email news@hampshirechronicle.com. All one word, .co.uk, or you could write an old style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment, Belgarum, first person, and letter from Westminster, but not necessarily in that order. And the editor heads up her article this week with Diverse Events Are Great for the City. She writes, "It's hard to believe that Winchester Cocktail Week is set to return for the first time in 5 years. The COVID pandemic and lockdown put it on hold in 2020. Amazing to think that was 4 years ago. But it's now being revived this weekend, and a good thing too. Gary Witter from the Cabinet Rooms in Jury Street is again behind the idea, and a number of other local businesses backed by Business in Winchester Business Improvement District are taking part, as reported earlier. Festival wristbands can be purchased at the Cabinet Rooms and are valid from the 1st to the 9th of June. People can show their wristbands at participating venues to be able to buy signature festival cocktails for just £6. Wristband holders can also get discounts with the official retail partners during the festival. Mr. Whiter is also behind the welcome revival of the Winchester Pride event later this year. These diverse events are great for the city and the surrounding district. They raise the profile of Winchester and attract lots of visitors who spend money in the city's bars, restaurants, shops and hotels. Winchester now has well over 20 annual or biannual festivals, from food and drink to poetry and music, and of course the Hat Fair, celebrating its 50th anniversary this July. The strength of these is that most are bottom-up events, put on by dynamic people, not top-down from big organisations. It creates the feel of city that is far from the clone town Britain that people complain of elsewhere. Long may it last. Now, a letter from Westminster this week is the final one from the Winchester MP Steve Brine. Nick.
My final column is perhaps more reflective than usual, but I hope you will forgive me as I prepare to formally step down as Parliament is dissolved ahead of the general election on July the 4th. 14 years ago, in May 2010, I was first elected as RMP. That was the culmination of many years' hard work and realised my dream. It is, of course, hard to leave, but wherever my travels take me next, it will remain the privilege of my life to have served in the House of Commons. When I was in my teens, I had a day out in London. I sent my parents a postcard of the Houses of Parliament and, rather presumptuously, wrote, "My future office." I had forgotten about the postcard, but when my father passed away, just days after the last general election, I found it among his things. They had kept it all those years, and I know both my parents, Mum passed away from breast cancer in 2003, were incredibly proud. I have won four general elections and will be the first and last MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford because of boundary changes. I was elected into a coalition, have voted to send our armed forces to war, lived through the Brexit years, and served in various government roles, including as a government whip, a health minister, and latterly as chair of the Health and Social Care Select Committee. It is a record of which I am proud. As public health minister, I began what would become known as Pharmacy First, and I wrote a comprehensive cancer plan. The next government must urgently update it. I established the HIV Commission alongside my friend, the Shadow Health Secretary, which produced a roadmap to get England to zero new transmissions by 2030. I extended the national HPV vaccine programme to boys. Working alongside two secretaries of state and some very talented officials, I think we did some good things. I always said nobody owns Winchester. I won the seat because I worked really hard to earn your support in the first place, and I kept it because I did the job to the best of my ability every single day. And, importantly to me, I've always run 100% positive campaigns because I utterly reject negative campaigning that does so much to undermine politics and those within it. I fear I shall be disappointed, but I hope that continues locally in this general election campaign. I have tried to stay in touch over the years through many means, including over 160 letters from Westminster for this newspaper alone, and more than 1,200 articles for parish magazines across our area. And my final annual report, looking back over my time in the job, is available for download from today at www.stevebrine.com. And the Steve Brine bit of that is all one word. My advice to those wishing to succeed me as Winchester's MP, focus on what you will do, not telling tales on others. Be our champion in Westminster. It's very easy to get lost and be an irrelevant voice. Not the other way around. And always put constituency before politics. Thank you for your support over many years. And above all, thank you to my family, Susie, Emily and William, for allowing me to serve, as well as my dogs, Popcorn and Monty. And finally, remember, it's nice to be important, but it's much more important to be nice.
Now, in first person, George Hayter writes about check before believing this week. Here's Chris. Thank you.
I like to think that friends and colleagues see me as cool and steely, and ready to spring into action when called upon. So I was flattered when I received an urgent email from a colleague asking me for help. His SOS was an unusual request. He wanted me to purchase for him Apple gift vouchers worth £300. A man on a mission, I hurried into Winchester, where I used my credit cards to purchase the three £100 vouchers, redeemable for Apple's electronics or software. I emailed for further instructions. My colleague had run out of time to come and collect the vouchers, he messaged. So now he needed me to photograph the vouchers and email the photos to him pronto. I was beginning to feel that I was being rather put upon by this colleague, who I didn't know well. Why did he need these vouchers? They're for incentives, he emailed back. Now I got it. My colleague regularly attended business meetings and events, and these vouchers were obviously prizes to reward high sales or similar achievement. I got down to photographing the vouchers, which had serial numbers enabling exchange for goods. Then my wife arrived home and asked what I was doing. It's a scam, she said, immediately. I looked at my email screen anew as I considered my wife's awful verdicts. It took me about 4 seconds to realise my wife was right, as usual. I phoned the police and they referred me to Action Fraud, the UK's National Reporting Centre for Cybercrime. Good thing you didn't get as far as photographing the vouchers and emailing the pictures to the fraudsters, Action Fraud told me. That meant the thieves couldn't see the serial numbers needed to use the vouchers. Action Fraud urged me to contact Apple to cancel the vouchers. All this happened in about March. Since then, I have spent hours emailing and phoning Action Fraud, Apple, and my credit card issuer in efforts to get my £300 back. Each of them said refunding me was a job for one of the others. A couple of times, I went back to WH Smith, the Winchester High Street shop where I brought the vouchers. They said the same. I was pretty much resigned to not getting the £300 back when one of the parties got back in touch to ask if I'd managed to get a refund. I think that prompted me to phone Apple again. The upshot of an intensive hour talking to them was that they wanted to try reactivating the vouchers. Although they had been cancelled, I still possessed them. With the three vouchers now worth £300 again, I went back to WH Smith and was told they still couldn't refund me because it wasn't them that had my money. The £300 had been forwarded to the wholesaler that had provided the vouchers. I asked to see the shop's busy manager and he was like a saint. He spent ages tapping data into the till, then he phoned his supplier and talked to them. 10 tense minutes later, and I had in my hand a till receipt showing a £300 refund to my credit card account. Since then, I've been telling anyone who will listen that they should do all their Christmas shopping in WH Smith, because the manager there is a saint. What I didn't mention to the manager or anyone else in WH Smith is that when I brought the vouchers, The assistant serving me warned that Apple vouchers were often used in fraud. Do you know this person who has asked you to buy vouchers worth £300? The assistant had cautioned me. Yes, I said. My mistake was to assume that the email came from my colleague just because it bore my name and his name. If money is involved, always double-check who an email has come from.
Thank you, Chris. And now Bel Garum has a couple of short pieces from an alternative point of view and some pictures. Daphne.
Right, so the first item's headed up one of the best places to work. A restaurant founded by a top celebrity chef has been named as one of the best places to work in the country. Brasserie Blanc, operated by the Hartwood Collection, was founded by Raymond Blanc and Mark Derry in 1996. The chain, with a restaurant in Winchester, was included on the Sunday Times Best Place in the UK to Work list. It is part of the Hartwood Collection, which operates 23 Hartwood Inns and 14 Brasserie Blanc restaurants in the UK, with a total of 1,300 employees. Brasserie Blanc Winchester opened in Jury Street in 2008. The collection met the requirements with an average 81% engagement score in the workplace survey, 9% above the average industry engagement rating. They also scored excellent in 4 out of the 6 workplace categories. Melissa, a restaurant manager at the Winchester branch, told the Chronicle, "I've worked in quite a few restaurants, and I've been here for 9 years. That speaks volumes in itself. We have a very good team morale." She said, "Appreciation is recognised in the company, and flexible working is incorporated within the company benefits." The company is aiming to expand its business in the UK by 2027, with hopes to grow 61 pubs and restaurants in the UK by 2027. And that's accompanied by a photograph of some of the Brasserie Blanc staff, the catering staff in stripy aprons and head coverings, and a couple of the waiting staff in very businesslike aprons. They're all smiling broadly and looking very happy with their job. And the second item is headed Dressing Up for Bridgerton Bliss. Houghton Lodge Gardens plans to host a Regency-themed event, Bridgerton Bliss, on June the 9th. This homage to the popular Bridgerton series, following the success of a similar event last year, provides an opportunity for guests to immerse themselves in the era's charms. Guests will have fun activities such as dance demos and classes by the Hampshire Regency dancers. The Bossard Quartet will provide music as visitors explore the picturesque, period-inspired gardens. An array of dining options will be available, including afternoon tea and picnic hampers full of Hampshire-produced treats from the Glass House Tea Room. Historical lawn games offer a touch of fun and friendly competition. While dressing up in Regency fashion isn't compulsory, it's encouraged. The event takes place from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Houghton Lodge Gardens, North Houghton, Stockbridge, SO26LQ. And that one is accompanied by a picture of a previous event, I would imagine. And we can see Houghton Lodge perched on top of a lovely green hill. And it's such a pretty building in that Regency style, with barley twist chimneys, sloping roofs, and dear little Gothic dormers. Very, very pretty. And there's a group of people in Regency dress, back to us, strolling towards the hill and the lodge. So I think we'll all say we hope the sun shines for that.
Thank you. Now, let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. What have we got? Ah, right, on Sunday the 2nd of June, Twyford Waterworks has an open day. That starts at 11 a.m. and you can discover how the drinking water that's piped to all our homes has been pumped from deep within Hampshire's Downs for over 120 years. So that's in Twyford. Then on Friday the 7th, attention all shipping. There's a celebration of the shipping forecast with Charlie Connolly. This is at 7:30 at the Theatre Royal in Winchester. Tickets are £15 for that, and contact the box office if you're interested. On Saturday the 8th of June, Fleetwood Unchained, there's a Fleetwood Mac tribute act. That's also at the Theatre Royal. That starts at 7:30. Looking a bit further ahead, on Sunday the 16th of June, the Diva Singers have a concert at 6 p.m. at St Mary's Church, Winchester. And that's to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Diva Singers. Even further ahead, on the 22nd of June, Captain Swing's Message to Mitchell Dever, A Journey in Prose and Poetry Through Turbulent Times. This is at 7:30 at St Mary's Church, Church Street, Winchester. Mitchell Dever, I should say. A commemoration in prose and poetry of Henry Cook, the youngest swing rioter to be executed in Winchester Jail in 1831, featuring Mitchell Dever by J.R. Ackerley. There we are. There are other events, and we will tell you about those in due course. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 1st of June, the sun will set at 9:11 p.m. and on Wednesday the 5th of June, the sun will rise at 4:53 a.m. and will set at 9:15 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Nick, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. County Council elects chairman and leader. Hampshire County Council elected a new chairman and leader at its annual general meeting on Thursday the 23rd of May. Councillor Keith Manns has been elected as chairman, and Councillor Nick Adams-King is the new County Council leader. Councillor Adams-King took up his new role following a decision by Councillor Rob Humby to step down after 2 years in the post. Councillor Adams-King has been the County Councillor for Romsey Rural since 2021 and a member of the Cabinet since 2022, with key portfolio responsibility for universal services, including the county's network of highways. A chartered surveyor, Councillor Adams-King's career has also spanned the property and hospitality sectors. He was first elected as a Bournemouth Borough Councillor in 2005 and became a Test Valley Borough Council in 2015, and then the Borough Council's deputy leader from 2017 until earlier this year. He is married to James, a consultant at Southampton General Hospital specialising in geriatrics. They have two children and live near Romsey. Councillor Adams-King said, "I would like to pay tribute to former leader Councillor Rob Humby and deputy leader Councillor Ros Chadd for steering the County Council through two intensely difficult years. Rob stands down knowing he has changed Hampshire County Council for the better. We owe him a huge vote of thanks. Under my leadership, Hampshire County Council will continue to strive to be an efficient, caring, innovative, business-friendly council. One that cares for our environment, tackles the challenge of climate change, and actively promotes the positive and necessary work we do to protect our most vulnerable residents." Councillor Manns was elected to the position of chairman, and outgoing chairman, Councillor Patricia Stallard, was thanked at the meeting. Councillor Manns is the civic head of the county. he will represent the council on royal visits and ceremonial occasions in Hampshire, as well as carry out other civic activities and duties. The chairman presides over county council meetings. The new deputy leader is Jan Warwick, who is also a Winchester city councillor and lives in Hursley. Councillor Anne Briggs, the member for Waterloo and Stakes North, was elected vice chairman. Other cabinet members are Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Adult Social Care and Public Health, Councillor Zoe Huggins, Hampshire 2050 and HR, Communications and Performance, Councillor Ros Chad, Children's Services, Councillor Steve Forster, Education, Councillor Kirsty North, Universal Services, and Councillor Lulu Bowerman, Highways and Waste.
Winchester chooses city's 825th mayor. The 825th mayor of Winchester has been elected. Councillor Russell Gordon Smith took over the position from retiring mayor Councillor Angela Clear at Winchester City Council's mayor making and annual council meeting on Wednesday, May 15th at the Guild Hall. He is the fifth Liberal Democrat councillor in a row to ascend to the position. In his first speech of mayor, as mayor, he thanked Councillor Clear, saying it is daunting to be the latest in a long line. He said, "Public speaking is clearly a part of the mayoral role, but I think there is another related part, which is what you might call public listening. The mayor has many opportunities to listen to others, and I think it is immensely valuable to understand people's concerns, their problems, and their ideas. And I think I also found as a deputy mayor, you very often connect disparate groups that sometimes don't know of each other's existence. And I also feel that in the hubbub of daily life, there are a lot of voices that go unheard. And I hope that I can listen to the voices which are silent, silenced, or ignored. At that point, I will conclude my speech and start listening." Councillor Gordon Smith also revealed the four organisations that he would be supporting as his mayor's charities: St John's Dementia Support, Winchester Sea Cadets, Hampshire History Trust, and Winchester Radio. Councillor Clear also gave a speech thanking those who had helped her during her second term in office. She says, "As I stand before you, my heart is filled with both gratitude and melancholy. For the second time, I have served as mayor for Winchester and District, and this past year, or rather the past 18 months, has been fantastic. I once again embarked on a journey of civic duty and engagements, and being mayor for the second time allowed me to step into this role with greater ease and a bit more confidence. It has been an incredible journey, and as I move on to the next chapter of my professional life, I will hold such wonderful memories of those moments and of those people who have made me laugh and have made me cry." Before the meeting was declared closed, the mayor called for nominations for the new deputy mayor, with Councillor Sudhakar Aichwal elected to the position. The event ended with a reception in the Guild Hall.
Council rapped for no-fault eviction. A former city councillor has slammed the city council's decision to serve a no-fault eviction order to a resident who has lived in his home for 27 years. Jonathan Marsh, 48, has lived in a flat in Sussex Street since 1997 and has been served four eviction notices in the last 4 years. The property is owned by Winchester City Council and has been operated by Bournemouth Churches Housing Association, BCHA. However, the lease recently expired, meaning it has returned to the City Council's stop list. Mr. Marsh is again facing eviction from a council whose leader has publicly criticised no-fault evictions. In a cabinet meeting last year, council leader Martin Todd criticised the use of no-fault evictions. Former City Councillor Ian Tate raised Mr Marsh's case at a Cabinet meeting held at the Guildhall on Wednesday, May the 22nd, saying that another flat in the building, which had previously been occupied, had been vacated and left empty. Ian Tate said, "I am shocked and extremely disappointed that this council has authorised the register provider landlord to apply to Winchester County Court for a Section 21 no-fault eviction order. If the judge confirms the order, then the tenant of 27 years will be homeless and the council will be obliged to offer housing advice and options. This is exactly what happened in 2022 when the tenant of the other flat in the building was evicted. That flat remains empty to this day. To my mind, the council is acting no differently than that of a rogue landlord, precisely what the legislation is attempting to get rid of. The council is more interested in properties and investment than in someone's home." Council leader Martin Todd said, "I am not in a position to talk about individual circumstances, although I can talk about the building. The reason the flat remains empty is because the building was surveyed in 2017 and again in 2021, and it showed there were problems with subsidence, meaning we were not in a position to relet anything in that building until major construction has been done and the building made safe for occupation. This council takes this responsibility very seriously, and we offer support and a housing place before a Section 21 notice is implemented. Nobody is going to be homeless in this process, and that is an absolute commitment. This is entirely a matter for Mr. Marsh, but if he wishes to talk to someone today, we will sort out the paperwork to resolve this situation."
Don't fret. Ukulele Festival is set to string you along. The Winchester Ukulele Festival is set to return at Winchester Rugby Club on June the 8th for its fifth annual celebration. The festival promises a fun-filled family day that transcends the common association of the instrument with George Formby. George Hinchcliffe, the founder of the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain, will headline. Also taking the spotlight will be Warehouse of Thieves, noted for their distinctive fusion of progressive rock, contemporary folk and indie sounds. Ukulele Simon, recognised for his unique looping and percussive playing technique, plans to revisit his performance from the last festival. Phil Dolman also returns to deliver his old-time blues songs, while introducing a touch of exotic Dixieland and New Orleans jazz will be Tin Roof Strollers. The festival starts at 9 a.m. with ukulele workshops. The festivities will extend for 11 hours and encompass activities such as product displays by premier ukulele manufacturers, a try-it-out area, a children's tent, and a selection of food stalls. There will also be a charity raffle with proceeds directed towards Winchester Hospice. To cap off the day, the Mother Ukers will host a party after the performances, and the Unplug the Wood team will lead the splendid strum-along, a standout event that encourages everyone to join in with their ukuleles. The venue at Nuns Walk Hyde will counter adverse weather with a large marquee. There is free parking and a bar that's set to serve until 11:30 p.m. Tickets are priced at £38 per person, with children under the age of 12 admitted free. The gate gives access from 9 a.m. with last admission at 7 p.m. Organisers say the festival promises more than music. It offers an inclusive community experience that celebrates the versatility of the ukulele.
Thank you.
A dream come true for new coffee shop owners. A new city centre coffee shop has opened its doors. Cavi Coffee on Jury Street held its grand opening on Friday, May 24th. The man was opened The business, even, was opened by the Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith, and the shop's managing directors, Dan Tamang and Dan Sacri. Councillor Gordon Smith said, "It is great to have a new shop opening in Winchester. This location has been empty for 5 years and was boarded up. It was not what we wanted." Speaking to The Chronicle, Mr. Tamang said, "This has been a dream for so many years, so this is a dream come true. It'll be great for the community. I think the Winchester community deserves better coffee, and we hope to offer the best coffee and the best food." Mr. Tamang, who is also the founder of DT Coffee Roastery in Moorside Road, said Cavi Coffee is focusing on building its brand and focusing with working with local suppliers and businesses in the future.
Schools Run and Fate declared a success. The third Compton 10K and Fate has been declared a success by organisers. The event on Sunday, May the 18th, was organised by Compton School Association. The multi-terrain 10km run was sold out, with many runners and spectators going on to then enjoy the fate in the school grounds. The winners of the 10K race were Leo Malifant, 36.47, and Sarah Kingston, 43.07. Participants came from local running clubs, including Winchester Running Club, Winchester Fit Club RC, and Eastleigh Running Club. Prior to the 10K, the runners took part in a warm-up led by Fit State, with local businesses Alexandra Sports and Physiotherapy and Wellness offering support and advice. Visitors explored stalls and took part in games, while music was provided by local band Hot Rabbit. The headline sponsor for the event was Charters, with other local businesses lending their support, including Rathbones, Veolia and Sam Gavin's Photography. The final amount raised will be announced soon, with all the proceeds from the day going to support Compton School. And that's accompanied by a lovely photograph of, well, it looks like hundreds of runners, all in their singlets and shorts. It's a sunny day, they've got sunglasses on, and they're all raising their arms and waving to the camera. So they look as if they're really enjoying themselves.
They haven't started yet.
Well, the next piece is about a charity walk that's just coming up. Best Feet Forward for Hospice Charity. A hospice charity that helps children and young people with life-limiting conditions is preparing to host its largest fundraiser of the year, a 26-mile walk from Winchester to Salisbury. Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospices for Children and Young Adults will hold the 18th annual Clarendon Way Walk on June the 2nd. The challenge sends walkers through the picturesque countryside between Winchester and Salisbury, across the Test Valley, raising funds. People can choose three distances, 26, 12 or 5 miles, all taking them along the historic Clarendon Way route from Winchester Cathedral to Salisbury Cathedral. The route is well signed and there will be pit stops providing refreshments and toilet stops. Volunteers from the charity will be cheering people on. This year, Naomi House and Jack's Place will be using previous year's stock of their event t-shirts to reduce its carbon footprint. Charlotte Patrick, events team leader at the hospice in Sutton Scotney, said, "We are so excited to be back with the Clarendon Way walk. It is such a great day and we are always blown away by the dedication from our supporters to push themselves with their walk and fundraising. This is our biggest event of the year and the money raised from the walk helps us to provide outstanding nursing care for seriously ill children and young adults. Don't miss out on your chance to make every step count and sign up today. The event is suitable for all abilities and ages from 5 years. And you can still register just at Naomi House www.mhs.org.uk/walk, and that Naomi House is all one word.
Dawns with Dawn in Chronicle of Sunrise. Try saying that 5 times quickly. Hampshire author Dawn Nelson recorded a year of diverse sunrises from Hambledon, noticing wildlife and watching the changing seasons. In a mission to reconnect people with the landscape, heritage and nature, she challenged herself to witness the new day dawn once a month for 12 months. Documenting the changing colours and temperatures, she chronicled everything from a dark, frosty winter sunrise to an extremely early one in June. Seeing everything from a roebuck to a pair of tawny owls, she observed their lives and fur under a range of skies, from a deep midwinter sunrise to a lilac-tinged dawn overfly by migratory gulls. For those wanting to experience a sunrise this summer, she advises choosing a spot about half an hour before the expected rise at 4:30 a.m. in June. She said watching the sun catch the horizon can create awe-inspiring sights akin to Italian Renaissance chapel ceilings. Good vantage points in Hampshire include Old Winchester Hill, Butser Hill, Port Down, and the renowned Watership Down. Those less inclined to early rises can stay cosy and read her book, Stories of the Sun. More of her work can be found at www.ddstoryteller.co.uk.
Restored plaque back in its historic place. A plaque to mark the location of the First Methodist Church in Winchester has been unveiled at King's Walk after being restored. Mayor of Winchester, Russell Gordon Smith, Superintendent of the Methodist Circuit, the Reverend Peter Rayson, and the leader of Winchester City Council, Martin Todd, were at the ceremony. The church in Silver Hill opened its doors in 1785 with a ceremony conducted by John Wesley, the founder of Methodism. The building was later sold and continued to be a place of worship until 1865. It was then used in a variety of different ways until it was demolished in 1970. Last year, it was announced that Winchester City Council had appointed Jigsaw to take forward a new vision for this part of the city, now referred to as Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR. Following a revival of King's Walk, thanks to improvement works and the commitment of a number of local businesses, it has been decided that the plaque should be reinstalled on the Silver Hill side of King's Walk as the original location of the church. Mr. Rayson said, "I'm delighted in the success of the occasion of reinstalling the plaque on King's Walk. Methodism has given a significant contribution in the last years to the city and would continue to do so in the future. I am most appreciative of the way that the councillors and officers of Winchester City Council have supported the reinstallation of the plaque for future generations." Councillor Todd added, "I didn't realise quite how long and deep our history of Methodism was in our city. It's been wonderful to celebrate that with Methodists from across our area and link that history and tradition to the exciting work we're doing alongside Jigsaw to regenerate this part of our city for the future." After the Methodist congregation left the building in Silver Hill, they had a variety of homes until 1865, when St. Peter's Church and then Parchment Street Church was opened. In 1974, the Methodists joined with the United Reformed Church in Jury Street to form the United Church Winchester. Finally, in 1956, as a result of development in the north of Winchester, the Wesley Methodist Church in Wick was opened. And there's a picture there of the mayor, the superintendent of the Methodist Circuit, and Councillor Martin Todd, standing in front of this plaque, which is quite high up on the wall, actually. I don't know that you could read it from below, but maybe I'm wrong. And there is a close-up of it just underneath.
College to offer glimpse of gardens. For the third year in a row, Winchester College will open its gardens to the public as part of the National Garden Scheme. The scheme gives people access to more than 3,500 private gardens to raise money for nursing and health charities. Last year, Winchester College raised more than £6,500 and welcomed nearly 700 people. Over June the 1st and 2nd, people will be able to explore Moberly Garden, a traditional college quad, Bethesda Garden, a quiet sitting garden, the gardens of the college's war memorial, and the Warden's Garden, with its herbaceous borders, woodland, and private section of one of the most famous chalk streams in the world. Members of the college gardening team will be on hand. There will also be refreshments available in the Warden's Garden. The gardens are open between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. on both days, and access is via the Porter's Lodge in College Street. Tickets can be bought on the door or by visiting Find a Garden, that's all one word, findagarden.ngs.org.uk.
Absolutely delighted at Music Festival's success. The Winchester Chamber Music Festival is celebrating a successful series of events. 9 concerts over the 4 days from Friday, May 3rd to Monday, May 6th offered a huge range of music, including Baroque music of the 17th century, contemporary works by the festival composer in residence, a string orchestra gala, and a jazz concert. Neglected female composers were represented, and the festival continued its educational and outreach activities. Festival director Kate Gould said, "I was absolutely delighted that both our core audience and the newcomers seems to thoroughly enjoy the more unusual programmes this year. I was particularly thrilled that 800 young children heard a string quartet last week and experienced the power of live classical music, which I passionately believe should have a stronger presence in the school curriculum and young people's lives." At the heart of the festival were performers including members of the Gould Piano Trio, Elias Quartet, and Chamber Orchestra of Europe, joined by chamber music partners such as the soprano Catherine Dane and the lute and theremin player Liz Kenny. Most of the concerts took place in the refurbished St Paul's Church, with the popular family concert and a masterclass at the Nutshell in King's Walk. The festival gala concert took place in the packed Theatre Royal Winchester, and a late night concert at St Lawrence Church was also a sellout. Each concert included at least one new work, notably 3 Tales of African Migration, composed by Dr Bongani Ndondono Breen, which was part of the festival finale, and works by modernists Lucanio Biro and Carl Vine. Even before doors opened to the public on Friday, May 3rd, the Piatti String Quartet, was presenting interactive concerts to 2 packed school halls in Eastleigh, and the Festival String Quartet was performing an informal concert to the residents of St John's Winchester. The public festival began on Friday, May 3rd, with a school's performance, the culmination of work done in St Bede Primary School, followed on Saturday morning by a family concert. There was also a notable outreach event at the Arc in conjunction with Winchester Gold. For the first time, the festival gave an opportunity for music college students, this year the Aestus Quartet, to be emerging quartet in residence. The festival's composer in residence, Piers Halliwell, wrote 3 of the works performed and gave the composer's talk. The Fritz Brothers offered a jazz performance on perspective on familiar classical tunes.
Laughs and fun as hijinks comes to city. As we arrived at the Theatre Royal Winchester, a huge white truck with hijinks, spelt J-I-N-X-S, emblazoned on the side was unloading in the side street. We couldn't catch a glimpse of what it was unloading, but its very existence was enough to excite and intrigue my 7-year-old son. What could they possibly be needing that could involve a truck so big? That's when we knew that we were not going to be watching some standard run-of-the-mill card trick act. Michael Jordan's show, Hijinks, has done the rounds, appearing in TV shows such as Penn & Teller's Fool Us. He's picked up a few awards on the way, and it has even had a regular slot at Blackpool Tower Circus. To be honest, it had passed us by until a recent visit to another magic show at the theatre ignited a burning desire to see more magic from my son. And Hijinks did not disappoint. Main man Michael is a 30-something showman, although he looks much younger on his leaflet picture. His bio says he's an accomplished magician, unicyclist, juggler, illusionist, plate spinner, fire eater, and guitarist. He certainly pulled out all the tricks. It's a show of 2 45-minute halves, making it excellent value for money and excellent for a family trip, especially those with small bladders and an appetite for interval ice cream. You reap your money's worth. It's a traditional throwback to the old type of magic show, with three scantily clad female dancers adding a bit of pizzazz and glamour. However, these ladies are not just there for decoration. Most of the grand illusions require a slim and dexterous person, so these lovely ladies come in handy for squeezing into boxes and sliding out of chains. With jokes and charisma, Michael brings the audience along with him every step of the way, and the audience participation parts brought the biggest guffaws. It's entertaining, and Michael is a real showman. He cracks up the circus tricks, spinning plates, eating fire, and even juggling knives on a unicycle, before ending with a sentimental speech, or trick, where he says this show is his life's dream. He made time to greet people in the lobby after, and whatever you think of traditional magic shows, you couldn't help but walk away with a soft spot for him and his show. The Theatre Royal is a nice place to spend time with family, and Hijinks was the perfect all-age family pleaser. Not too scary, just good old wholesome magic done well. He's next in Hampshire on Saturday, September the 7th at 2:30 p.m. at the Barn Theatre Ringwood with his Magic and Marvels show. More magic is also on its way to the Theatre Royal Winchester with Killian O'Connor, My Magic World, appearing on Tuesday, July the 30th. And that's accompanied by a picture of Michael Jordan with the 7-year-old boy looking absolutely thrilled, and also with him on the page, on the stage, under the spotlights.
Scouts going for gold at the Palace. 9 scouts from Winchester celebrated achieving top awards by meeting a prince and an astronaut at Buckingham Palace. On Monday, May the 13th, scouts from Winchester's Trident Explorer visited the Palace to mark their Gold Duke of Edinburgh awards, with 13 members of the group now having achieved this feat since the group was formed in 2018. A further 12 scouts are due to win gold within the next year. The explorers met Prince Edward, who has taken over as spearhead of the award scheme from its founder, his late father, the Duke of Edinburgh, as well as guest speaker, astronaut Tim Peake, at the special garden party for those who had completed the Gold Award. Since it was set up in 2018, for those aged between 14 and 18, Winchester Trident Explorer Scouts had a strong focus on everyone in the group achieving D of E awards, as they form the core of the Chief Scout Awards. The awards consist of expeditions, volunteering, skills, and physical sections, with a special residential week away. Leaders Henrietta Lucas and Nick Warner have supported Trident's top 2 age groups through bronze, silver, and gold awards, helping to organise expeditions in the Lake District and Snowdonia. Henrietta and Nick said, "We are immensely proud of what our explorers have achieved. Week in and week out, volunteering around Winchester, developing skills and also overcoming the challenges of hiking and camping for 4 days and nights in the mountains. They have become friends for life through doing these awards together. And there is, of course, an accompanying picture with the scouts meeting with Tim Peake.
Races push back sports boundaries. Hundreds of people descended on Ropley for one of its stranger annual traditions. The town held its annual pram race on Monday, May 27th at the Ropley Recreation Ground. Dozens of teams took part, with prizes being awarded for the best dressed and the quickest times. The competitors started and finished at the recreation ground, completing a 2-mile course around the village, with one person having to sit in the pram at all times. However, some of the prams were designed for style over speed. Alongside the race, the event featured an antique stall, a dog show, a plant sale, a barbecue, and more. This was the 59th year that the pram race has been held in Ropley. The event started in the mid-1960s, originally taking in the three village pubs, now all demolished or converted to other uses.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Chris Atkinson.
Goodbye.
And thank you for standing in, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.